So without further ado, at this time, I would like to introduce our speakers. Joining us today, we have Dr. Rachel Ward. She's an epidemiologist and assistant scientific director for Maverick and New England GREC VA Boston Healthcare System. Sorry for stumbling over that. Joining her today, we have also have Douglas Beidelschbach. He is the program manager for physical therapy and rehabilitation and prosthetic services. And also joining us today, we have Dr. Joel Schulten. He's the national director of physical medicine and rehabilitation. So I'd like to thank each of our presenters for joining us today. And at this time, Dr. Ward, I'd like to turn it over to you. So again, Rachel, just go ahead and click that drop-down menu that says show my screen.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, and we can see your slides. So thank you.
Wonderful. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. As Molly said, my name is Rachel Ward, and I was a researcher in residence on this project. And today we are going to be looking at analyzing current challenges facing OT and PT services purchased in the community through the CHOICE program. Okay, and we have a poll question that I just put up. So what is your primary role in the VA? Student, trainee, or fellow, clinician, researcher, manager, or policymaker, or other?
Thank you. So the answers are streaming in. We've had about half of our attendees answer so far. So just click the circle on your screen next to the response that best suits your primary role in VA. And please note if you are selecting other, I will put up a feedback survey at the end of the presentation with a more extensive list of job titles, so you might be able to select yours there. Okay, we've got over 80% response rate, so I'm going to close out this poll and share those results. As you can see, we have 24% of our respondents selected clinician, 12% researcher, 39% manager or policymaker, and 24% other, and 0 student, trainee, or fellow. So thank you to our respondents, and Dr. Ward, I will turn it over to you one more time.
Great, thank you. Okay, can you see my screen okay?
We can, thanks.
Great. So it looks like we have a very diverse audience here, which is great. Hopefully, you know, we can get into some good discussion towards the end of the talk. So as I mentioned before, this was an HSR&D researcher in residence program funded by the HSR&D program funds. And it basically allows a researcher in residence, like myself, to dedicate 0.25 FTEs of time to work with a clinical program office. And the idea behind this type of project is to provide analytic support and bring research knowledge to policy and program planning. And this program is designed to be mutually beneficial for the program or operations office and the researcher, as the program office benefits from the advanced analytic expertise and access to a network of research knowledge, and the HSR&D researcher in residence benefits from an increased understanding of policy and operations, as well as increased experience with operational data. And the way the program works is that the program office identifies a policy or a clinical issue for the project, and examples might be analyzing the impact of a policy change, developing evidence-based policy responses to an emerging clinical problem, or exploring factors that are associated with variation in clinical performance. And then the researcher and the program office collaborate together to analyze the data and identify key findings to assist in strategic planning. So first, to give you some background of our project, our objective was to compare utilization and cost data for physical therapy and occupational therapy services in the VA versus those purchased in the community through the CHOICE program. And for those of you that are not familiar with the CHOICE program. It is a program in which a veteran can receive care through a community provider paid for by the Department of Veteran Affairs, and there are specific conditions that must be met for the veteran to qualify for the program. They include the VA not being able to provide the services that the veteran needs, the VA being unable to make an appointment for the veteran at the nearest VA facility within 30 days of the clinically indicated date, the veteran living more than 40 miles driving distance from the nearest VA medical facility, or having to travel by air, boat, or ferry to get to the nearest facility, or a veteran facing any additional excessive burden in traveling to the nearest VA medical facility, like geographical challenges, environmental factors, or issues related to their health problem. And this program was enacted in 2014 and was refunded in 2018. So the study population that we focused on was veterans who received PT and OT care through the VA or the CHOICE program in either fiscal year 15 or 16 or both. And I've listed the inclusion and the exclusion criteria for CHOICE care users and for VA care users below. For CHOICE care users, we selected fiscal year 15 and 16, categories of care of occupational therapy and physical therapy, and unique veterans were defined using scrambled SSNs and the first episode of care date. And for our VA users, we identified those that had a visit date between October 1st, 2014 and September 30th, 2016, essentially fiscal years 15 and 16. They had a primary or secondary stop code of 205 for PT care or 206 for OT care. Unique veterans were identified using the patient ICN and the first date, the first visit date and time. And we also included those with a veteran flag of null or Y, and no ineligible date or ineligible reason listed. So here is a brief summary of the demographics for both the CHOICE and the VA users. The numbers are in means and standard deviations, or frequencies and percentages. And you can see that the CHOICE users, on average, were slightly younger than the VA users at 57 versus 62 years of age. There was a slightly smaller proportion of CHOICE users that were men at 87% versus 91%. And a greater proportion of CHOICE users lived in highly rural areas and rural areas at 10 and 41% versus 1 and 30%, as you would likely expect given the criteria for qualifying for CHOICE. And I just want to point out, too, that below many of the slides, I have listed the data sources for those who are interested. So moving right into utilization, we examined utilization by looking at number of veterans seen in a year, the number of visits or encounters within a year, and then we calculated the number of visits or encounters per veteran for each year. So when we compared utilization for the CHOICE program versus the VA, we saw that, as expected, more veterans are relying on VA care overall than CHOICE care. But then when we looked at utilization per veteran, we saw that there was a greater number of visits or visits per veteran for CHOICE care than encounters per veteran for VA care. And we saw this being consistent across OT care and PT care, as well as fiscal years 15 and 16. So we wanted to look further into why utilization per veteran appeared to be so much higher for CHOICE care. And one of the ideas that came up was that this could be due to a larger proportion of VA users having less than or equal to three encounters for things like being assigned mobility equipment like a cane or a walker. And we did see a larger proportion of VA users with less than or equal to 3 encounters. So what we did was we excluded VA users with less than or equal to 3 encounters, and these numbers came somewhat closer to what we were seeing for the choice users, but we were still seeing greater utilization within choice care. We also looked at utilization by complexity, by facility complexity level, and we saw similar trends across all levels of complexity with a greater number of visits per veteran for choice care than encounters per veteran for VA care. And we looked at the range of utilization and cost at the station level. And again, we see the same trends at both ends of the spectrum that we saw overall. Choice users had a higher utilization per veteran than VA users. So now we'll switch gears a little bit to look at cost. So we estimated the administrative cost for choice care at $310 per veteran, and then we calculated the total cost for choice care as the amount paid plus the estimated admin cost. And you can see that these costs pretty much track with what we see for utilization. The total cost per veteran is higher among choice users. And on the VA care side, we've also broken it down by direct and indirect costs, which then add to total cost per veteran. And similarly, when we compare total costs, this trend could be seen across all of the complexity levels, just like utilization. And the trends can also be seen when we looked at cost at the station level. Again, we see the same trends at both ends of the spectrum, the lowest and the highest total cost per veteran that we see overall. Choice users had higher cost per veteran than VA users. And this slide here actually goes into a little bit more detail at the station level than the last. So on this slide, we've listed the 5 stations with the highest total cost per veteran for choice and VA care. And you can see that the trend of choice care having a higher cost being relatively consistent across the stations that we listed. And similarly, we list the 5 stations with the lowest total cost per veteran for choice and VA care, and we observed similar trends. So we also wanted to characterize change in cost and utilization from fiscal years 15 to fiscal year 16 by category of care and by whether it was choice or VA-provided care. And we saw the largest increase in utilization measured as the number of veterans. We saw this for choice PT care. And while the increase in utilization for choice OT care, I just want to point out that, you know, while this seemed minimal, it may be because the numbers were very small to begin with. And then for cost per veteran, we see the largest increases for choice OT care and choice PT care. And we also looked at utilization by ICD-10 codes, and we saw similar trends for both choice care, which is depicted by the blue bars, and VA care shown in the red bars, with the highest utilization for codes dealing with pain. And one notable difference is that within the top four codes for VA care, we see encounter for other specified aftercare, which we did not see for choice. And this is a much more expansive look at the top 15 ICD-10 codes with the most visits. Again, we see pain at the top of the list for both choice and VA care, but I'll just point out that we also see weakness listed among these top 15 codes, as well as difficulty in walking, cerebral infarction, and Parkinson's disease. And so I wanted to point out that we did attempt to look at access time. However, I just wanted to disclose that there was a substantial amount of missing data on the choice side for access time. And this was likely because choice is still in the relatively early stages of having the data being cleaned and organized. So we did have some limitations that I will go into a little bit more later. But you can see, particularly for dates like request date on the OT care side, we had a very high level of missing data. But despite that, we still wanted to get an estimate of the access time for choice in VA care. So we looked at the request date, or the date that the care was requested by the vendor or the veteran, and we looked at this date to the episode of care start date, which was the date of the initial appointment to start the episode of care. And we found that the wait times between these two different dates was higher for choice care than for VA care. Although the wait time did appear to go down somewhat for choice care from fiscal years 15 to 16, at least for PT care. And if you look above, this may have been at least in part due to a decrease in the time from time of request to scheduling date. So I mentioned that this project does have some limitations that are worth noting and going through. I mentioned that choice data is still in the relatively early stages of being cleaned and organized. So there were some limitations with regard to what we could investigate. I also wanted to point out that the recently released program integrity tool domain for the choice data, which came out very recently, was not available when we were working on or when we completed this project. So we did have somewhat limited access to documentation and the data, but we were really fortunate enough to work with VA Chief Business Office Purchased Care to access much of the choice data. I also want to point out that some of this data may not take into account the full admin costs, for example, any billing of private insurance that occurred, and also that remind you that it was difficult to compare access time between choice and VA care because we did have a lot of missing data on the choice side. So I've listed a few future directions and discussion points here. So we are still interested to know why the number of visits are so much higher for choice versus VA care. Now, we explored that this could partially be explained by the number of veterans that have less than or equal to 3 visits for things like issuing of equipment. But it could also mean that the amount of care at the VA may not quite be sufficient, or that there, there is an overuse of care through the CHOICE program, and we would really have to dig in deeper to explore these questions. Another future direction would be that to look and see if these trends continue beyond fiscal year 16 to fiscal year 17 and beyond. Although, unfortunately, we weren't able to answer this with our one-year project. And also looking to see how measures of care quality and outcomes track with the utilization and cost data for VA and community care. So that concludes the slides of this presentation, and I would like to acknowledge VA Chief Business Office Purchase Care. As I mentioned, they provided a substantial amount of the CHOICE data, including cost, utilization, and diagnosis data. I wanted to acknowledge that the project was supported by HSR&D program funds. And I also wanted to acknowledge the following individuals that helped provide mentorship and support during this program, as well as my collaborators, Doug and Joel.
Thank you. So at this time, I would like to invite Douglas or Joel to make any comments you'd like. And Doug, we can just start with you real quick.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Rachel, for a great presentation. You know, I think the biggest pieces that we take away from this is, you know, it's really is a preliminary look, and, you know, it provided some answers and some definitive information, but, you know, certainly we still have a lot of work to do in this area in analyzing it. I think the key advancement, you know, as we move into fiscal year 19, as Rachel mentioned, is the program integrity tool. So as we look at combining all of the community care and CHOICE data into a more accessible resource, that's only going to enhance our reporting. You know, we've done a tremendous amount of work in looking at VA clinician productivity, and now we can have a better source to look at the community care utilization as well. Obviously, you know, what stands out from the preliminary look is the vast difference in terms of encounters or visits per patient. And, you know, as Rachel mentioned, you know, what's the driving force of that? Are we looking at an issue with availability of VA clinicians to bring back patients for additional sessions? Is it geographically based? You know, are the return visits difficult because of geography, in which case, you know, the community partnerships help to supplement that area as well. But obviously there's a lot of questions that, you know, we still have to work through as we continue to move forward and as the CHOICE and the, you know, community care partnerships continue to evolve. A couple things that, you know, just really jumped out to me, you know, one is the variation in that visit per patient. You know, secondly, when you look at cost, it was interesting to me that, you know, we look at the complexity of a facility and often that's tied to geographic location and, you know, urban locations maybe a little bit more frequently than less condensed areas. And the cost for both CHOICE and VA care seemed to be higher when we got to the lower complexity sites. And I don't know if that's tied directly to the availability of the specialist in this area, in these areas, or, you know, what may be driving that component. But, you know, you look at OT and PT for CHOICE and for VA care, and those are the highest in terms of cost per veteran. And so that was interesting to me as well, in terms of what's driving that that finding. So those are just some preliminary thoughts. I think this is still an area that's very rich in terms of potential future efforts and future analyses. I am very hopeful, and I do believe that there is some work in terms of VA tools that we can look at the community care data in a little bit more concise manner through a pyramid analytic report, which would have that combined data source So that's exciting to me because that will really open the door for a lot of additional work as well. So with that, if I could turn it over to Joel for any comments as well.
Thanks, Doug. And thanks to, I first just wanted to say thank you to both Rachel and Doug. Great work. And we were, the Physical Medicine Rehab Program Office, we were just delighted to be able to kind of participate in this Researcher in Residence program. I think it was the initial, the first opportunity for that to happen. And we found this to be a very valuable partnership and collaboration. And it certainly was a pleasure to work with Rachel. And as you can all see, the great work that she's done or the great analysis she's done of this data has been incredibly helpful. Certainly, as VA has changed over the past several years and as we have all become really laser focused on access and what that means with purchasing care in the community and how do we integrate that with our existing practices, it's always been a challenge, I think, for many sites to kind of really look at the data, try to determine what's the best value for the veteran, as well as balancing not only the skill set and expertise, but also the overall cost for VA. And as we have seen in this analysis, it appears that care within VA is at a is maybe a better deal or less of a cost for VA. However, we do need to be cautious as we interpret that, as we know that may not, there may be some inherent access barriers to care in our facilities, which may, you know, help to keep those number of, the average number of visits down. So I will, you know, I am completely biased that I think care in the VA is better, but I do think it's inherent for all of us to take a really hard look at the data and think about what are the meaningful aspects of how this is data is captured and how we're interpreting it. This certainly gives us an idea of how we need to perhaps provide some education and training and in looking at how to provide utilization review for care that's being provided for physical therapy and occupational therapy from our community partners. But I think it's also important for us to look at our internal practices within VA and how we're providing that. We certainly, while we may not have the number of locations that our community providers might have that might be closer to the veteran, I think there are other ways that we can maintain access and improve access and also follow through with delivery of therapies with potentially incorporating some telehealth modalities to as we transition patients or veterans from their course of skilled therapy into their home exercise program or ongoing wellness program. So with that being said, I think this is really great data, a great analysis, and lots of potential opportunity. I would love it if we would be able to kind of repeat this analysis for more, for moving forward, because we have seen a tremendous increase from FY15 to FY16. I think I don't think it would be a surprise to suggest that number continues to grow, and we'll need to be really reviewing our practices as the medical centers will be doing their healthcare market analyses and looking a little more closely at how they how partner with community partners and what to purchase in the community. So thank you, Rachel, and certainly thank you, Doug, for this great work. And I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you. So we do have several pending questions, and we will just jump right in. For those attendees that joined us after the top of the hour and are looking to submit a question or comment, please just go to the control panel located on the upper in the upper right-hand corner of your screen. Scroll down to the bottom where there's a question section, and you can click the arrow next to the word questions. That will expand the dialog box, and you can then submit your question or comment there, and we will get to them in the order that they are received. So without any further ado, we'll get to the first one. Rachel, this came in when you were still speaking. Speaking of admin costs for choice, is this $310 included in the cost cited? Are admin costs included in VA costs? I'm wondering if the choice coverage is due to, I'm sorry, the choice overage is due to admin costs. Thank you.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Doug, if you want to respond to that, I'll let you go ahead.
Okay, that's fine. So thanks, a great question. So the 310 is the standard administrative cost for processing an authorization request for choice. So each authorization carried that cost with it. And you know, how we attempted to balance that. If you're familiar with the VA cost data from DSS or MCA, you know, we have direct and indirect costs. And so the indirect cost, we felt aligned more closely with that $310 administrative cost. And so we included both within the comparisons for VA and community care cost. There was a little bit of limitation there in terms of, you know, kind of teasing it out from a per unique basis to a per authorization basis. So we just kept it aligned with the authorization and had it as a one-time cost in our analysis. So, you know, again, that's another area where, you know, with some data maturity and condensing the data sources into a single source, we may have a slightly different view on that if we look at it, if we would look at it again or with future efforts. But that was the approach that we utilized for this particular analysis.
Thank you. Rachel, did you want to add anything to that, or Joel?
No, I think that covers it. I mean, like Doug said, we estimated $310 and added it to what was provided as in the cost data to more reflects the direct plus indirect cost that we were seeing on the VA care side to get to total cost.
Thank you. The next question. It looks like you only have half of what you need. You have utilization data, but what about clinical outcomes, both objective and patient reported? If you are not able to compare all, you may never be able to make effective changes.
I can answer that as well, and that's a fantastic question. What we have done is within the standard episodes of care, which will go forward with the new contract for physical therapy, there are three particular promise measures that we are going to require for the community care, and we've also begun to integrate those within the VA. Those are forms that are available through the TBI instruments package as we begin our discussions with Cerner for the next electronic health record. Those three will be required for particular physical therapy sessions, and those in particular look at pain, lower extremity functioning and mobility, and upper extremity functioning. So our attempt to have some standardized data outcome, clinical outcome collection and analysis is really based around that. You know, those are the three forms that we're moving forward with. I believe DOD is moving in a similar path as well. And, you know, that's our initial step. I think the SEOC rollouts will learn some lessons from that. You know, that's really just beginning at this point. But that's our office's attempt, to try to combine, as you stated, the utilization, the cost, and then also the clinical outcomes piece.
Thank you. Oh, you want to add something? No? Okay. The next question, do you know what fields in the TPA monthly choice table were used for the timeline for the timeliness estimates?
I can answer that. I believe they were just as listed within the table. If we were to go back, we had a request date, scheduling date, episode of care start date, activity start date, and the authorization creation date.
Thank you. Also, for the utilization table, for the utilization data, were you able to break it down by rural versus non-rural? Do your rural providers go into the home? Maybe looking, comparing services, delivery processes could shed some light.
We didn't explore that, but we do have the data, and I think that would be a really interesting future direction.
Thank you. The next question we have, the cost per visit is important, not just the cost per veteran. The cost of OT per veterans is cheaper in VA, but the patient has one-third of the visits compared to choice. So per visit, VA costs more. The question is whether 15 visits are necessary for an episode of care or if three suffice.
This is Doug. I think that's an excellent point, and I think that ties directly back to the outcomes piece. What's the right number? There's obviously without having outcomes, and outcomes is the challenge across rehab, VA, private sector. You speak to anyone who tries to do this type of work, and that's always a great challenge. But you're spot on. Is three visits correct? Because that's when they've reached, in a broad picture, is that when they've reached their benefit? Is it, 14, 15, 16? Is that the right number? And I think the other piece that is really difficult to factor in is the conditions. We know that a lot of the utilization across the board is for musculoskeletal conditions and pain. And so, as we break out specific diagnoses and conditions and acuity versus chronicity, there's a lot of factors that come into play. And in this type of analysis, we just, we really can't get to all of those answers. But you're exactly right. And at the end of the day, what is the right volume of care to obtain the greatest outcomes? And that's, I think, what we all strive to obtain.
Thank you. The next question we have, we were told by our community care office that any veteran sent out on choice is authorized automatically for 14 PT visits. Is that a local agreement with choice or standard across the nation?
My understanding, and I don't want to speak out of school here, so Joel, if you know further, you can certainly supplement. My understanding is within the standard episodes of care, there's an initial authorization amount, and that is a national number. And if care is indicated to extend beyond that point, then the contractor or the community care provider would come back to VA and request more visits. But I do believe that is nationally driven, and it's based on the standard episode of care documents.
And Molly, this is Joel. So I agree. I don't really have anything in addition to add, other than with the new, as Doug mentioned, with the new contract going out, those standard episodes of care have been reassessed and I think revised, and I think that number is going down to... I won't say the number because who knows what it will finally go out as, but we've provided recommendations for maybe a bit more conservative number. I think as Doug mentioned, when the community provider then requests an extension for more sessions, that comes back to the medical center and whatever process is in place at the local site to review that and then, you know, either approve or deny the extension. I think it's going to be very interesting to see as time goes on how sites are dealing with that and how that kind of utilization review process then affects community therapy in the community. We're hearing of many different of sites doing several different things, including some sites have hired therapists in the business office just to strictly review all of the requests that are going out and kind of requests for additional services coming back in. And it would we'll want to kind of capture some of those practice models and then look at what is really the most effective as far as reviewing what's going on, and then trying to, as Doug mentioned, if we have more quality metrics that we can better compare, I think that will improve the process overall.
Thank you. The next question, what is the status of implementing standardized outcome tools?
So this is Doug. I think as I stated earlier, for physical therapy, as we've looked at the standard episode of care documents and for community care, and then also internally, we've looked to incorporate the PROMISE tools. Again, we're looking at the PROMISE pain interference tool, PROMISE upper extremity 7A, and then PROMISE physical function with mobility aid. And, you know, so those are three more general outcome metrics. They're not extensive. You know, my experience with outcomes and with any time we ask the field to collect information from a clinician's perspective, it needs to be feasible, you know, and it needs to be functional. So can the clinician complete this within their normal course of business? You know, is it an excessive ask for us to have them collect these forms? And so when we looked at the PROMISE forms, they are rather brief. So it's not an extensive ask of the clinician to capture this information. And they're very functional. You know, they're looking at function. You know, these three, you know, again, my experience with this, there are a million tools out there right now. And so any one individual may have a bias towards one or another. And we certainly recognize that. Our decision was made upon the availability of these resources, the discussions that we had with DOD, and then also as we continue to move forward, you know, they fit very nicely within the tools that we feel will be available with the next iteration of the electronic medical record. And even as we move forward now, they are currently embedded within TBI instruments, so we do have a templated system that can be used to capture this information, document in CPRS, and then still have the data available on the back end in the database. So that's the current direction. Obviously, there are more specific metrics that can be used for given areas. But, you know, in terms of requirements and, you know, kind of having that baseline, that's where we're looking right now. Certainly, there may be some optional forms that are included in future efforts. But, you know, currently we're going to be looking at the PROMISE tools that I mentioned.
Thank you. Where can we find a reference to the three PROMISE measures?
We've discussed those on some of our internal rehab admin calls. If there's any questions, you can send them to me, douglas.vitalspot@va.gov, and I can send you out the forms and, you know, try to answer any other questions you may have.
Is there a cap on the number of visits requested for an episode of care?
So as Joel had mentioned, there are recommendations within the standard episodes of care for the initial authorization, and that places a, you know, a quote unquote cap on the number of visits that would be provided initially. Once the community provider would approach that level, if they feel that they need to continue with more treatment, they would come back to VA and request an additional authorization for more visits. You know, as was stated, there are some adjustments in the new CEOCs, the new standard episodes of care. We have not seen the final release of that yet, so we don't want to speak to what those may be, but we have provided some more conservative recommendations based on the utilization and feedback that we've received from the field from the initial CEOCs.
Thank you. And here's a comment. Going forward, I highly encourage you to include functional outcomes, ADL and IADL status, in addition to U/E and L/E function. Best of luck in your process.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. I had my phone muted. Our UR nurses require OT and PT to state the number of visits we recommend when approving the community care, but as stated, the SEOC is 14 visits. So do we have to specify the number of visits for UR?
I think there are a lot of local process characteristics that, you know, might be unique from site to site. I don't think it's necessarily unrealistic for those types of recommendations if you're reviewing the case and trying to determine, you know, how long you would anticipate this course of treatment would last. There are a lot of areas as we move forward with our partnership with community providers that we will have opportunities to improve things, and that may be one. You know, maybe standardizing that approach is a benefit that we'll see in the future. Right now, I'm not surprised to hear that some sites may ask a VA reviewer to provide that type of information as well. But you know, again, there are going to be some future opportunities to help standardize the approach. I know that the CEOCs, the standard episodes of care, are discussions regarding specific conditions and specific treatments, and those specific treatments or conditions may carry a different recommendation in terms of the initial number of authorized visits. So that may align with what you're reporting from your utilization review nurses.
Thank you. The next question. As a PT UR staffer, currently 14 visits total eval, 12 follow-up, and 1 re-eval, this is mandated for all TriWest care. However, if 14 is inappropriate, we can process internally for lesser number as a direct appointing process/provider agreement with local providers in San Francisco. Oops, sorry about that. It was a long one to read.
and again, I think that's another area where we're optimistic that as we enhance and modify the CEOCs moving forward, you know, we'll have a little better overall approach to that. I certainly recognize what you're saying, and I think Joel mentioned as well the recommendations we've made moving forward are probably a little bit more conservative than what you may have seen from the initial contract and the initial CEOCs.
Thank you. Can you please elaborate on the program integrity tool?
Rachel, are you able to comment on that?
I've just looked over some of the documentation very briefly. I know that they have some metadata available. I could put in the link that we received over email a little while ago, if that would be helpful. But I'm not very familiar with it.
Thank you. And this is a comment. It is almost magical that VA authorizes 14 visits for choice and 15 is the average use. The private sector provider profit motive here is glaring. Glad to hear that visit limit will probably be revised down.
That's certainly one perspective to have on this. And, you know, again, without having definitive answers, you know, there are a lot of potential drivers for the total volume of care in the community, and certainly that's one that needs to be considered. But we'll probably not proclaim that as factual until we would have a little bit more information. But it's very observant and certainly something we looked at as well.
Thank you. Well, those are the final pending questions or comments, but again, I'd like to allow each of you to wrap up with anything if you'd like to, and we can just go in order of speakers. Dr. Ward, do you have anything you'd like to leave the audience with?
I just want to say, you know, that I think that this was a good start to investigating the challenges facing OT and PT care in the community, and I think that, you know, as you have heard, there's going to be a lot of opportunity to continue this type of work and dig deeper into these questions. So I think that's really exciting. I wanted to share the link for the program integrity tool. Molly, do you know how I can, if there's a way I can like paste that in somewhere?
Yeah, I'm sorry, can you say again, is it a link or an actual document?
It's a link.
Okay, yeah, you can just send me the link, and for our attendees, you will receive a follow-up email 2 days from now, and it will lead to the archive recording of this, and in that reminder email, I will include the link mentioned.
Great, thank you.
No problem. Douglas, did you want to wrap up with anything?
Thank you. I wanted to thank Rachel, first of all. She was great to work with. This was a great opportunity for our office. And, you know, certainly we have a good understanding of programmatic issues and, you know, having the ability to tie in some analytic expertise and research expertise was really a nice compliment that we could take at least a preliminary look at this information in this area. I think as hopefully we've highlighted, I think we realize there's a lot of additional work that would need to be done, and certainly we'd welcome that opportunity in the future as well. I think there's a lot of great work that goes on in the VA, and you know, for all of the transitional opportunities that it presents, our ability to better enhance our partnerships with the community only can benefit the veterans in the long run. So I think we have to really look at it from that perspective in terms of a complement and providing a complete healthcare network for our veterans as we move forward. So thanks to everyone in the field. And again, Rachel, thank you so much for your work with this project as well.
Excellent. Dr. Shulkin, I'm sorry. Dr. Shulkin, do you have anything you'd like to wrap up with?
Thanks, Molly. Just again, thanks to Doug and Rachel. Great work. I think this is very timely and very helpful to have this information as, you know, as we continue to expand our provision of care in the community. I think it, as Rachel mentioned, it's going to be inherent that for us to continue to look at this data and see as kind of our systems, our collaborations get a little more mature, if that changes the overall utilization rate and, you know, kind of the cost numbers as we saw the significant change from 15 to 16, and then, you know, now with the volumes much, much higher, we'll need to continue to look at that. And, you know, I'm just, from a timing perspective, with our new working on the new electronic health record and how data is incorporated into the veteran's electronic medical record, if we can improve the capture of quality quality metrics and outcomes, I think that will position us much better to really be able to kind of answer where, you know, where veterans best served. And I think there will be some interesting, it will be very interesting for local sites to look at what they can best provide in-house versus what can best be provided out in the community, and balancing that quality versus access equation for the individual veteran. So I think we've got, I think Rachel's got lots of great ideas to study in the future, and we're certainly willing to partner with her and encourage others to be looking at this data as well. So again, a huge thanks to Rachel and also to Doug, and I'll turn it back to you, Molly. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, I too would like to thank all of our presenters for coming on and lending their expertise to the field. And of course, thank you to our attendees for joining us. In just a moment, I am going to close out the session, and a feedback survey will populate on your screens. Please take just a moment to fill out those few questions. It is very helpful for us to review your feedback and improve presentations and the program as a whole. And as I mentioned, this session has been recorded. You will receive a follow-up email 2 days from now with a link to the recording, as well as the link requested from Dr. Ward. And with that, this does conclude today's HSR&D Cyber Seminar presentation. Have a great rest of the day, everyone.